Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com. Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 163 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Sunday evening, 9 days after our last episode. A lot has happened, really a lot has happened over the last 9 days. Join me to, I guess, catch up on all of that fun stuff and not so fun stuff is the great Eric Cole. Hey, man.
Hey, man, what's going on? You've been out of town and you've missed some pretty brutal baseball with a couple notable exceptions, but...
Yeah, it was interesting. I caught parts of the stuff, but I was traveling over the weekend. Kind of funny. You know, last weekend I had to travel, which is why we recorded early on Friday. We flipped the podcast around. I traveled, and then I ended up sort of catching the madness on Saturday and Sunday, but not as plugged in as I was going to be. Then I was home during the week when the Braves were lighting themselves on fire, pretty much. And then I went out of town again, and it didn't go great early, but then today's game, Sunday's game, ended very well. So sort of kind of funny, like the bookends were really good. You know, last Saturday, the day after we recorded, was like an all-time comeback win, down 7-0 in the second inning, and you come back and win the second game of a doubleheader on Saturday, and then you play well on Sunday, it goes in the tank, and then the other bookend, which was today, ended well. So if you wanted to focus on that, it'd be pretty positive. And I did make the joke earlier that the mood will be better on the pod today because of the game on Sunday, because if we had recorded last night, it would have been pretty dire.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, right? Because really it's one aspect of this team that seems to continually bite it, and that's the bullpen, because there's a lot of things about this team to like a lot. There's some of the young starters, whether it be Max Fried or Mike Soroka, you know, those guys have been playing well. The lineup's been playing, you know, with like one notable exception and a couple other guys maybe getting a little bit unlucky here and there. Like, the lineup's been really good. It's just been this bullpen, and they just consistently have been failing to varying degrees. And it's really kind of – it's the worst feeling, because, like, there's – you can see how many wins they've left on the table just because, you know, the bullpen just couldn't get a few outs. You know what I mean? And they just – they couldn't – it didn't even have to be, like, a particularly clean relief appearance. You know, they could have given up a run or two, and they would have still won some of these games. But, like, these total implosions where, like, all of a sudden the Braves just lost games that they had well in hand. It's been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, that's the overarching thing of the entire week plus and the whole season to this point. We all kind of know it. You know, Braves fans have been very vocal and We've talked about it a lot on this pod, and we'll do it again today. Just, you know, it's not, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the bullpen has been the weakness to this point. Like, that's not breaking news to anybody. The degree of which it's been bad has been a little bit jarring. You know, even though we pointed out on this pod over the winter that the bullpen was a point of concern because they didn't really add to it at all. Even then, even with all of those caveats that we threw out before the season started, no one thought that was going to be as bad as it's been so far. So, with that said, I mean, it's probably going to improve just because it can't – let me stop myself. It can't get worse, I suppose. It isn't likely to get worse. Even with the same talent, I think the Braves, you know, the bullpen is a problem. But even with the same guys with no improvements in terms of talent, I think the bullpen is better than it's been so far. That's not huge praise. But it's not good. And we kind of could all agree on that, I think. So, like, I mean, especially if you the numbers look a little bit better because of the really, really dominant Tukey, quote-unquote, bullpen performance. Remember that? It was like a 6-7 inning gem out of the bullpen.
Newcomb couldn't make it out of, like, the second inning or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, if you remove that, it gets even uglier. But, yeah, it's not great. I mean, I think you told me this before we started recording about how bad the numbers look coming into the day. You know, the numbers have not updated in terms of the all the leaderboards just yet. Factoring in today's game, the bullpen was a little bit better today, which allowed the Braves to have the comeback win. But before that, they were, you know, a bottom five bullpen in the league, and no one's surprised by that. So, you know, that's sort of the backdrop. We'll talk about individual stuff as we go here. We'll kind of chronicle the week start to finish. Let's start on a positive note. I referenced it before, but the last Saturday's comeback 7-0 win, you know, Dansby bombs to make it interesting again, 7-3, and then the 5-run ninth inning that includes a bases loaded walk by Freddie Freeman, and then a Ronald Acuna, fittingly, with a 2-run double to win the game. And then AJ Minter actually looked good in that game. He did not look good other places this week, but that was fun. So we should at least outline that. It's been a while, and I know that was, I guess, it feels like a lifetime ago, but that, you know, I noted this, people did that. It felt like a turning point of the season. It actually didn't end up being that, considering the way they play the rest of the week, but it's worth talking about how crazy and awesome that game actually was.
Yeah, it was kind of wild. You know, it just seemed like a lot of people wrote off that game. I think it was like, you know, the running joke on Twitter was like, okay, well, time to go to bed, et cetera, et cetera. And they just kept, you know, getting a run here, a run there, and then all of a sudden they just get 5 runs in that last inning, and all of a sudden the game's over. And, you know, talking about Ronald Acuna just in particular, you know, Freddie's kind of has been that consistently excellent that he usually is. Ronnie has been, you know, like over 1,000 OPS for, what, last 17 games, I think, something I saw earlier. And it feels like he still hasn't, like, fully hit his stride. And I'm not really sure how I feel about that, because if you got that kind of production out of anybody for any particular, maybe, you know, he's not, like, mashing home runs at some crazy rate right now, and we've seen him do that before. You know, it's a lot of singles. He draws a lot of walks because there's a, you know, he's just, it seems like every at-bat he's in, you know, is a really competitive one. It just, it makes me feel really good going forward that we're seeing, like, top-level production out of him, and it doesn't even feel like he's reaching his ceiling yet.
Yeah, I mean, Acuna is a good example of that, but, you know, the entire lineup, we can just talk about this now for a second. The lineup itself has been quite good, and the offense has been quite good. You know, coming into today, a game that the Braves scored 8 runs in, they were a top-5 unit in the entire major leagues in terms of position player war, and, you know, they were top 7 in WRC+. Like, this is a very good lineup so far. There, as you mentioned, I think at the top of this pod, there's been one notable exception that we'll come back to. But if you look at the numbers, even the guys who have had underwhelming moments, like Ozzie Albies a couple days ago, his numbers didn't look great. Now, with a really good game today, his OPS is up like to like 830. Like, he's now looking very good again. Josh Donaldson came alive, is now famously about a 900 OPS guy. Freddie Freeman's Freddie Freeman. Ronald Acuna has been really good, as you referenced. Nick Markakis has been very good to this point in the season. You know, with the exception of, you know, sort of Johan Camargo and limited sample and Enciarte, it's pretty much, but everybody else has been great. You know, Dansby's kind of cooled off a little bit, but he's still been really good for the whole season, like an 850 OPS. And if he's that guy, look out. Tyler Flowers has been quietly awesome to this point. Like, it's not, it's frustrating because the Braves are only 13-14, but if you want to be positive, and there's room for that, the offense and the position players as a whole, they've been really good. I mean, that doesn't even factor Charlie Culberson, who's been lights out off the bench. Like, it's been, there's been bright spot after bright spot, and it's probably going to not continue at quite this level, because I'm not sure this is a true talent, you know, top three offense in the major leagues, but you could still celebrate the fact that it's been quite good so far.
Well, you say that, right? But so here's the thing. If we assume that Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna are just going to be among the better hitters in the National League. Yeah, yes. They're going to be roughly this, right? You know, maybe a little bit up and down. You know, Freddie had stretch where he didn't really hit for a ton of power, but he was still kind of like walking and getting singles here and there. And now he's been hitting some home runs. Yeah,
he has a 450 OBP for the season. He's really good at baseball.
Yeah, he's insane. And like Ronnie, same thing. If you assume that, and then you assume that Josh Donaldson still hasn't hit his stride yet, which, I mean, he's starting to get there. He had the Volpe home run game earlier in the week, and then he had a home run today that, you know, ended up clinching the win for the Braves. And you could see his batting average not be in the 250s and 260s and maybe be close to, like, maybe closer to a 280 hitter with, like, more consistent production. And you take into the fact that Dansby Swanson, I just want to talk about him a little bit because peripherals aside – because all those look pretty good, right? Like you see a lower BABIP and you wonder maybe he's been getting a bit unlucky. You see the walk rate going up and you see all that other stuff. All that stuff is true. You know, ISO is better. Hard hit percentage is better. All that stuff is better. Just in general, just based on the eye test, he seems so unlucky. He hits these balls on the nose and he seems to hit them right at guys and they're in big moments. And it's – I could see him – like what we see right now, what's like a 117 WRC plus out of him right now, I could see that being better, at least for stretches. I mean, it's Dansby, and you know, you have to kind of take a lot of this with a grain of salt just because of his track record. But he looks so much better at the plate, and you know, working these deep counts. It doesn't seem like he's getting fooled by those outside pitches anymore. I honestly think that he has a chance to really do some real damage this year. And if you think that's true, like, this might just be a top five offense in the league, and that's kind of wild for me to even consider. But if you have two guys in Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna who are legitimate MVP candidates, Josh Donaldson, who's been one before, and you know, if he goes on a tear, he could just be another one again. If you have three guys like that in your lineup, plus contributions top to bottom, it's really not that crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, the swing guys, I think we could probably agree on this, the swing guys as to how good this offense is going to be, the guys are Albies, Markakis, and Swanson. If Markakis is this guy, the guy he was in the first 2 months of last season, and the guy he's been so far this year, that really helps. Albies is, you know, the highest upside of these three players, in my opinion, offensively, and he's now turning it on a little bit. And then Swanson, your point about him is a good one. Like, his baseball savant numbers, like his hard hit rate, his exit velocity, they're all off the charts good. Like, he's just smashing the ball. And for me, you know, I think we've been a little bit higher on Dansby on this podcast than most people. With that said, you know, I need to see it a little bit more to believe this is 100% real, but the numbers and the peripherals even look really good. So if he's just this guy now, even if he cools off a little bit in terms of the overall OPS numbers, all that stuff, he's an awesome baseball player. So those three things combined. Yeah, that seems safe now. I think he's just very good defensively. That's just him and Albies. Those guys, the defense is in general is really good. I mean, it's the infield. Donaldson, you know, isn't quite the guy he used to be, but he's not a problem at third base. You have Swanson is awesome, Albies is awesome, Freddie is very solid. No problems there. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right in that the offense could be better than we envisioned it if everything aligns. I need to see more from the guys I just mentioned. Like, I have a hard time believing that everyone is going to hit like this. You know what I mean? Like, it's not impossible, because if you go player by player, you know, Albies doing this is not a huge surprise. Markakis, I think, is a little bit over his head, but he's been a good hitter for a long time. Like, he's not a huge minus as an offensive player. There's no question about that. Like, he's a better than average hitter. As a general rule, even if you have his, you know, he has flaws, but getting on base is not a problem. And if he hits for some power, which he's been doing so far, that's a huge plus. And then Swanson, you know, we haven't seen it, but the numbers and the underlying stuff tells you that this is real. So if you go player by player, there are no flukes here. And that's the cool part about the offense right now, is that the guys who are supposed to be good are good. And then the guys who we had a little bit more question about are also good so far. Again, there's only one guy who's not playing well offensively, and honestly, coming into the year, the two guys you would have said were the biggest question marks were Swanson and Inciarte. You kind of have to take one out of two there, honestly. Like, Inciarte is a better hitter than he's been so far this year. Like, it's well documented that he's not the greatest offensive player in the world, but he's better than a 652 OPS guy generally, I think, still. With that said, like, you kind of have to be okay with Swanson hitting the way he is if that means Enciarte. Like, you'll take one out of two there, especially when combined with everything else. So, you know, big picture, the offense has been a full-blown strength, which I would not have projected. It was definitely in the realm of possibility coming into the year, but it's been better than anyone could have rationally projected, I think.
I mean, I completely agree. And I mean, and a big part of that has been the catcher platoon's been pretty good, has been good. I mean, but you kind of mentioned it before. Flowers has been really hitting really well. And McCann's been fine. You know, they've been splitting those duties reasonably well. It was kind of a little bit scary for a little while there when like both those guys got dinged up and you had to kind of rely on Alex Jackson for a couple starts. But
I think, you know, Flowers has the highest OPS on the team right now, which is not going to continue, I wouldn't imagine, but
no.
Well, he's really good at baseball. But, like, Tyler Flowers remains perennially underrated. He's very good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's things about his game, you know, controlling the running game, not his strength, but, you know, but one of the better framers in the league, and right now he's really hitting the ball well, and funnily enough, I was going to take my kids to the game on Friday night, and it was, you know, the Ronald Cooney bobblehead night, and all that, but my I had some family issues come up where I'm a family member of my family had to have emergency surgery, so I couldn't be away from that for too long. But you know, we really wanted to get the bobblehead, so I was swung up there to, you know, go get the bobbleheads, walk the kids around, let them look around the park, but we couldn't stay for the game, so we left. Which continued my daughter's streak of touching any game that Tyler Flowers starts in, and he rakes. I don't think that she's been to five games now, and four of them Tyler Flowers played in, and he's homered in all of them at least once. And that was his two home run game on Friday. So I guess the moral of the story is I just need to take her to games more often, just because, you know, if for no other reason to kind of, you know, give the offense a bit of a boost, even though that game didn't go particularly well overall. Maybe they lost because she wasn't there. I don't know. But the offense has been really good. I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the Ender, because he's been interesting in that we agree that he is not the player that he is right now.
He's not this bad.
No, he's not a 230 hitter. And defensively, he hasn't looked that great either. Plays he normally makes, he hasn't been making. When do we start considering that we've long maintained, I mean, like, this is a couple of seasons in the making now, that he's not a leadoff hitter. He's just not. If you're going to bat him eighth, then, you know, and he's the guy that he has been, then, you know, so be it. But he's not a leadoff hitter. When do you start getting worried about having him in the lineup altogether? Because, I mean, having two spots at the bottom of the lineup where, like, you get basically no production becomes a problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. They've been pretty open about platooning him against lefties this season. You know, it hasn't been every single time, but, you know, that's the right approach at a bare minimum, I think, at this point, because, you know, Enciarte has never hit lefties well. Like, there's been small periods where he has, but, you know, over a full season wise, like, he's not a good hitter against left-handed pitching. Even if you're a huge pro Enciarte offensive guy, you could acknowledge that his platoon split is real. It's not like incredibly swift in the way that some guys are, but against lefties, he probably shouldn't be in the lineup if everybody's healthy, especially when you have someone like Johan Camargo available to play. So if you put that on the table, I think there's an argument for Enciarte to play and to not play. You know, defensively, even with what you're saying, I think is true that he hasn't been quite himself. He's still a very good defensive outfielder. And if you put him on the field with Acuna in a corner, you're very, very good defensively. And, you know, if you're hitting him eighth or ninth or whatever Snicker wants to get crazy and do, I think in general you're probably still better, just because of his defense. And I think, again, he's a better hitter than he's been so far. But, you know, if it was a one game sample to, you know, for my life right now, would he be in the lineup? I don't think he would be. I think you would probably play Camargo in the corner spot. And maybe, I mean, honestly, here's part of the problem as well. You know, Matt Joyce is a pinch hitter on this team for the most part, but Matt Joyce is a lot better hitter against right-handed pitching than Ender Enciarte is. So it's interesting. Like, I think if I had to put out a lineup right now it would, for, you know, one game sample for my life, regardless of who is pitching for the opposition, it would definitely include Camargo, and it would not include Inciarte.
So here's the reason why I ask. It's like, I agree that I would probably agree with you that Ender would not be in my ideal lineup right now. One game playoff, 4-year season, you know, I don't think he would be in it.
And you still, but, and by the way, he would still end up playing at the end. Like, his defense is super valuable, but yeah, over the course of the first 6-7 innings, the gap between him and Camargo at the plate is big enough where I think you have to go with Camargo with a gun to my head. But, you know, and I'm going to let you finish, but that does take away some of the utility that we screamed for a year about Camargo. And that's why if they had one more guy, I would be more pro to not playing Ender every day or close to every day. But with Camargo in his super utility role that he should be in, that doesn't allow you to just pull Ender out of the lineup. I think they're doing it well right now and having him play against righties and not lefties. And that's probably what I would continue to do. And unless he's still this, like if we get to June, July, and he still has a 600 OPS or something like that in the low 600s, that becomes more of an issue. But, you know, well documented that he's been someone who's had some, you know, first half, second half weirdness in the past. Like, he's more of a field guy, and we'll see how that looks. But there's no perfect answer other than the fact that he is better than this. And it isn't as if the Braves have the super obvious solution to just like flat out bench him. I've seen that solution quite a bit put out there on Twitter recently, probably just frustration on some people, and I get where it comes from. But, you know, I still want Camargo in that do it all role that he's been in, which means that you have to play Ender and Inciarte sometimes. It's just what it is.
So here's my thing, right? I completely agree with everything you just said, because again, we've talked about we were hoping Camargo could be this guy, and having that kind of guy on your team makes your roster deeper, gives your guys chances to get other guys rest. All that is good. My question to you right now is that right now, Adam Duvall has an OPS over 1,000 at AAA, 7 home runs in 4 straight games, including a multi-home run effort. If you have Adam Duvall, who's a legitimately good fielder in a corner, particularly left, and you have Camargo that you can slot in to play matchups over there if you need to, is this roster better right now with Ender on it playing the role that he's playing right now? Whether or not you platoon him, I mean, if you platoon him, that's, they've been doing that somewhat, and that seems reasonable. Or is the roster better right now where you move on from Ender and Inciarte? Let's say you like trade him to, you know, the Giants, who seemingly are shopping around for a veteran outfielder. Maybe you get relievers from them. They've been shopping their veteran relievers around. Seems like there's a swap that could be made there. I'm not saying it'll be made like, you know, this month or even relatively soon, because early season trades are always tricky. Is this roster better right now with Ender in his current role, or is it better with potentially an Adam Duvall who actually has remembered how to hit again? And maybe seeing regular playing time in left and going Duvall, Acuna, Markakis, and then, you know, again, playing Camargo there in spot starts versus what it is now.
So basically, the question is, do you trade Ender Inciarte?
I mean, yeah, because we agree he has value.
I think he has value. I think you'd be selling low, which is not optimal. I don't think if you had traded him a while ago, you would have gotten a lot more. You're talking about in season. As much as I think I'm pro Adam Duvall versus the consensus, I don't trust Adam Duvall. And there's just no reason to flat out trust Adam Duvall. So it just depends on what you can get more than anything else, it's sort of a cop-out answer. Because I think... Because you have Camargo and you have Joyce, who mashes righties, he always has. And then theoretically, if you were to trade Camargo, you'd have Duvall up there as well. You have some platoon options. None of them are great, and those guys are actually. I mean, it's very interesting. This always stems from the fact that you have Ronald Acuna. That's right. Where it comes from. That you have this guy who should be playing center field, who is, you know, an all time talent, You know, in an ideal world, yeah, you would hand Ronald the center field job. I think, though, you probably needed to do that in the offseason, which I think we talked about at one point, like not in a serious way about trading Inciarte, but
right.
you probably needed to do that in the offseason. Like, maybe if a deal falls in your lap that makes perfect sense and you have a contender or a pseudo contender that thinks they need that, they're an Ender Inciarte away and they want to give you some pitching, sure. But, you know, realistically in season, I don't think you're going to get enough to where it makes sense. And I think Inciarte does still have value. So, long story short, I would venture to guess that you'd be better off holding on to him right now. Although I would not be firmly held to that if you put a deal on the table that I thought was good value for him, because, you know, that's kind of the X factor is what you're getting. And we obviously have no way of knowing that.
Yeah. And I guess it's the tricky part, because we talked about this is like, you know, what happens if, you know, we talked about this, like if Adam Duvall would have raked in spring. We talked, you know, if he's good, you know, what do the Braves do with him? Because, you know, obviously he was really bad last year, but now he's down at AAA and he's in the discussion as like one of the better hitters in the International League right now. And if that's the case, you have this guy down there and you have a center fielder who's struggling right now and has a limited offensive profile, even at his best. What do you do in that situation? I mean, do you just let this guy that you traded real assets for and that you kind of wanted to have like he's on the 40 man and he's a guy that you want to potentially extract some value out of, and he has like real power and he has some defensive ability. You're not necessarily having a huge drop off defensively if you have, you know, Duvall in left and Acuna in center.
I think Duvall is interesting. I mean, if he didn't have the disaster of last season,
right?
We were very high on Duvall, and I think rightfully so. Like, his track record is interesting in that it's not a batting average driven thing, but if you look beyond that, the power and the defense combination that he had before he fell off a cliff was really intriguing. And if you compare that to, I mean, I know we talked about the fact that Ender is better than his number so far, but if you look at the way that he has hit, like his exit velocity, like his more advanced numbers are like disastrously terrible.
Yeah.
Like, he's in the very, very bottom of the league in exit velocity and hard hit rate. You know, all the numbers that you would look at for peripherals to talk about his batted ball data, they're all terrible.
And he's one of the slowest guys on the team too. And he has a game that is predicated on like being able to use his quote unquote speed to do some things. When in reality, it's just a willingness to run. I mean, Markakis is a mile an hour faster than him on average sprint speed,
which is insane. And that just shouldn't happen. So, but I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down in that, but there is at least a chance that Ender is just bad at the plate now. Like, he's never been great at the plate. Even, you know, I know the 200 hit season is the one everybody points to, but even in that year, he was just slightly above the league average as an overall hitter. He's been a approximately league average hitter for his entire time with the Braves. Obviously give or take a few percentage points in either direction. It's possible that he is just a bad hitter now.
He has looked a bit better lately.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying that is not completely unreasonable to think. I just, you know, on both sides, I do this looking for positive stuff and negative stuff. I try to do it for everybody on the team. I'm a sample size guy. I need to see, you know, I would need to see more of him being this bad before I believed it. It's the same thing as me talking about Dansby's offense. I'm intrigued by it. Everything is good. I need to see more of him before I just fully believe that he's this kind of hitter. That's just my default. I think people that listen to the podcast know that. But, you know, yeah, I mean, if you do the same thing for Adam Duvall, though, Adam Duvall, I would imagine, is a better player than the one we saw last year that we were excited about that ended up flopping in a major way. So There's not a perfect answer. I do think, though, there's at least an element, at least for me, of you waited too long on Ender Inciarte to the point now where I don't think you get much for him in the middle of the season. I could be wrong, but I'm not sure that the value is going to be there for a deal that, especially when you don't have a perfect corner outfield option. I know Adam Duvall is in the wings and you still have Matt Joyce, but that's not, and you have Camargo, but you're not doing this to call up one of your
another
guys to play every day. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not calling up, you know, Drew Waters to play every day or Austin Riley and putting him in the quarter. Like, that's not why you're doing this. You're doing this
been so good though.
But you know what I mean though? You're not doing this to like,
yeah,
you'd be doing it to platoon Adam Duvall and Matt Joyce with Semien Camargo. That's not as sexy as, you know, it just doesn't, I get the thinking behind it, but yeah. I don't think it's like as practical as people want to say that it is in terms of just actual things that are going to happen.
Yeah. And hopefully Ender, you know, he turns around. I mean, again, I don't see him as a particularly great hitter, but if his, with his defense, which is what should be good. And that's, I guess, my concern is right now is that not only has he not been hitting particularly well, but like defensively, he hasn't been great. And I don't really.
And he needs to be, because I mean that's the baseline that we've all pointed to a million times. That when he's an elite defender in center field, that just brings incredible value. If he's that guy, yeah. If he's that defender, then there's no discussion about this, frankly, because there's just so much value in that.
Right.
But if he's a step or two off that, and I'm not going to say that he is, but to this point in this season, all of the metrics that we have available to us tell us that he's not been quite as good. If that is real, then you're in some trouble with NCRT, because he needs to be that kind of defender to be a starter on a contending team. That's just kind of the reality, because his bat's not going to do it. I mean, even if he gets hot, and I think he'll have a hot stretch when he hits like he's hit before, but that makes him, you know, probably a slightly below average hitter over a full season. And that kind of guy is not someone you want starting for you every single day of on a contending team. So he's going to have to play defense to make up for that. And he always has. He just hasn't so far this year.
I can get behind that. It's just kind of, it was an interesting thought I had once I realized this. I mean, Duvall's raking. So it's just kind of an interesting sort of like, what do you do with this guy that you invested real resources in last year at the trade deadline to get him? And now he's hitting really well, and it's kind of, you just let him languish down there. I mean, does he turn into like another pinch hitter? I mean, what do you do with him? So it was just something interesting that I was thinking about.
Yeah, it's worth talking about. We probably spent too much time on it, because that's what you and I do. But it's interesting, and it's something to keep and come back to, because I'm looking forward to him having a week where he hits like 500 right now, because that's what happens when we talk about this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I'll be happy.
Brace yourself. Enter NCRT, NL starting center fielder from the All-Star game. It's going to happen now.
That's one of the funny things. I think there's a segment that thinks that we root to be right. That's not really true, especially when it comes to rooting to be right on negative stuff. I want them to just do well.
Yeah.
Like if Ender comes out and hits 500, I'll be happy about that. I'll look stupid and I'll be thrilled. So that's just what it is. Okay, let's talk about the pitching again for a minute. I know it's sort of a landmine area because of how bad the bullpen has been. But just let's start with starters real fast about what happened this week. Mike Soroka has not, since he came back, we have not talked about him, you and I, in this form.
Yes.
He is now back in a big way. Max Fried was finally human on Friday. I'm not worried about Max Fried because he's been awesome, but he was not incredible.
Yeah, he just got by two of the better hitters in the National League, unfortunately, in Trevor Story and Nolan Arenado. Is this what happened there? It's just,
yeah, I mean, he's still good. Don't worry. And then Fulte came back on Saturday after a couple of ugly rehab outings, and he was just so-so. And Kevin Gausman's now had back-to-back, let's just say, shaky outings.
Shaky's fair.
So all that put together, you know, the starting rotation looked like more of a strength a few days ago. And again, it's all sample size theater here. But where are you at on the starters? I know having Soroka back really helps things. But, you know, until we see Fulte be good, that would really help. Because Fulte being good would be really nice stability. And to this point, he had two bad rehab outings, then he was not very good on Saturday. So, I don't know. I guess the question is, where are you at on the whole starting rotation right now, knowing the bullpen is coming in a few minutes?
So, I actually, I thought Fulte looked fine. He gave up a couple home runs, which is, never ideal. But at the same time, you saw good action on his pitches. Nothing was, a big red flag. You know, only one walk is a big deal for a Fulte that we've seen. When Fulte's not good, it's when he doesn't have command at all and he's, walking a bunch of guys and then runs his pitch count up. Didn't really see that, gave up a few earned runs, but nothing about that start beyond just being a bit rusty was concerning for me. Obviously Soroka and Fried, the way they've been looking have looked great. You always have to kind of, with Fried, with his blister issues and kind of little minor injuries that he's, had here and there, you have to just kind of hope he continues it. And, Soroka had a shoulder injury this offseason. So you kind of want to, until you kind of see him put together a lengthy stretch here, you just kind of want to make sure that he's, going to make it, or he doesn't need more time or, anything like that. And, or with no setbacks and things like that, but they both look really good. Gausman and Tehran are just kind of, that they feel like four and fives right now. And that's, Tehran will have starts where he, looks really good for a few innings and then everything falls apart. That's been the Julio for the last couple of years now. And Gausman, he relies on a splitter, and the last couple of starts, it just doesn't feel like he can bury it. He can't, get it to drop low enough where he can get guys to swing and miss at it. He leaves them hanging over the plate and all of a sudden it's just 89 in like the lower part of the zone. And in this day and age, all those hitters have learned how to take, you know, it's not like sink, like, you know, back in, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago where you, the guys who threw sinkers, they just got all these ground balls. Players know how to drive those pitches low in the zone now. And Gausman doesn't seem to be missing, you know, missing bats, and, you know, he'll walk guys and he'll get his strikeouts here and there when the splitter is good. But when it's not, it just doesn't seem like he's a guy you can really rely on to kind of give your offense a good chance out of the shot, out of the shoot. And that's kind of what we've seen. He just seems like he's just been kind of inconsistent at best. And, you know, it's been really shaky. He'll have good starts. There's no question about that. I think he's too talented to just not be completely useless. But overall, I say that the rotation is, I would say, fine. I'm not, it's not a huge area of concern for me. It's not something I'm like, I need to see who else can come up and do some damage. I'm with Folty, Fried, and Soroka, assuming all goes well, I'm fine with that. And honestly, for the Braves' sake, I hope so, because what they should have done already, I think, is start some of these starting pitching prospects that had either struggled in their major league time or what have you, and try them out in the bullpen.
Sean Newcomb, where he can
actually, you know, pitch with some velocity. You know, same thing with maybe trying out Tukey there. He looked good in relief appearances in the past. Even a guy like Kyle Wright, who just seemingly cannot do well for himself down in AAA. He's like, ERA is over 11 now down there. You know, see if you can get them going, doing something else with guys with big time stuff. Bryce Wilson, who pitches off his fastball, he might not have those secondary pitches to be a starter. Maybe see what you can get him to do in the bullpen. All those guys have a chance, at the very least, and I would say better than average chances, of being better than a lot of the guys who are currently in this major league bullpen. And I feel like some of that transition should have already happened. I'm willing to give them some time to kind of figure out who they want to give a shot there. But ultimately, you know, once the starting rotation is sort of set, it's kind of these are the guys we're going to go with for some extended period of time, then they need to start, you know, figuring out maybe some of these young guys who have, you know, real talent can maybe give them some help in the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, Newcomb's the guy we've talked about a couple times recently. Yep. He's the obvious one, in my opinion, and we'll see if they do that in the near future. But, you know, to your point about the overall rotation, it's something we kind of talked about in the offseason. Like, we weren't necessarily enthused about the rotation being incredible, but it wasn't going to be a weakness either, in our opinion, and I think that's kind of bearing out now. Like, it's kind of just average, and that's okay. The problem is that you can't pair that with a terrible bullpen, because then you have problems. You can't get away with this starting rotation if you have an awful bullpen, and that's the problem. So, I mean, everything that we've seen so far from Soroka and Fried has been overwhelmingly positive. Folty has been good enough in the past where he gets the benefit of the doubt for a while longer. And, you know, that triumvirate is a nice place to start. We can transition to the bullpen now. I mean, we kind of all know the deal here. Not everyone's been bad, but most of the bullpen has been a disaster. You know, Jesse Biddle's now been sent down after, you know, 3 or 4 consecutive disaster performances from him.
Did you see him take that line drive?
Yeah.
Oh,
I felt bad.
Yeah, that
I feel bad for him anyway. Like, honestly, this is 100% genuine. I felt awful for Jesse Biddle before that. Like, he had, you know, the game where he came out and said this is never going to happen again, and then he gave it up the next day, and like, I just feel awful for him, honestly, because
he's been through a lot. Like,
yeah, and there's been
a bunch of injuries in the minor
leagues. He can't throw a strike, and it's like, it's just maddening. I know it's maddening to watch as a fan. I totally get that, but like, it was so bad you had to kind of feel for him in some ways, and kind of hilariously, his ERA is like 3.2 because it was
a lot of
errant runners. But everyone knew how bad he was for that little stretch, and now he's down. They actually went out and got Jerry Blevins over the weekend. A veteran guy, not very exciting, but he might be an upgrade. We'll see. He's at least been a very solid bullpen arm in the past.
He has a couple, like, 1+ WAR seasons as a reliever fairly recently.
Yeah, he's been pretty good in his career. So we'll see. He's very, I think he's like 35, 36. He's not young, but he's another lefty. That's helpful, especially with the way that Minter is pitching. So, I mean, we could probably go, you know, player by player. We don't really have to do that. But let's just say there have been very limited bright spots recently. It's basically
praise Lou Jackson.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's basically Lou Jackson who came in to close on Sunday because Minter tried to give it away. And to Snicker's credit, he went and got him, and it worked. And this is something that I want to say now, because I know we have crapped on the front office, and I believe rightly so, for not addressing the bullpen to this point. They could have done anything about AJ Minter, and Minter has a 9.35 ERA right now. That is not the front office's fault, because he was supposed to be the guy. He's the most talented pitcher in the bullpen. Like, that's not the front office. Like, pick and choose anybody else you want to, frankly, out of the bullpen. But Minter was always going to be a high leverage guy on this team, and he's been awful, and that's not Anthopoulos' fault. Everything else, you can point in that direction if you'd like to, but man, Minter being good would be very helpful, and he's been really bad.
Yeah, when you have this many guys, I mean, like, and again, Minter, I never would have thought I thought very highly of him. I thought he'd put in a lot of good work last year. He was a little bit inconsistent with, like, he had some injury stuff too last year. But when you have as many guys in this bullpen that have had problems, like track records of problems with both walks and being injury prone, and you don't really address it at all during an offseason. Like, I'm not talking about signing Kimbrel or signing like an Adam Ottavino, who's the guy that I wanted, but I can understand maybe why you don't want to invest a ton of money in the bullpen. To not upgrade at all, given those circumstances. I mean, like, Darren O'Day didn't pitch at all for the Braves last year, and everyone's acting surprised that maybe he wasn't going to be – even I was optimistic. And like, maybe, hey, O'Day was a good reliever. Maybe it was just a hamstring problem. But we don't even get updates on O'Day anymore. No. You know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be any expectation that he's going to pitch anytime soon at all. You know, same thing, like Luis Gohara. He's throwing an extended. That's all we know. And then we have other guys who, like, have had, you know, injuries, whether they be real or not. I mean, with Venters and with Biddle, they were so bad, it feels like they got put on the injured list for, like, you know, having ruptured success glands.
Especially, like, everyone made the joke, and I don't want to pile on, but, you know, it's hard for me to believe that that was a real injury, given the track record of Anthopoulos in LA as well. Like, that was not a situation where anyone believes it. Maybe he's hurt. It's possible he's hurt.
But he did take that line drive, and that's what he was listening. So it's
but the way that it was, the way it was also announced, like, it was like a hybrid injury. It was like,
yeah, like right thigh contusion, right groin strain, I think.
And I was like, wait, we're gonna do a double injury here? Like, that just means that, like, it's like they wanted to add fuel to the fire for that. It's like, by the way, guys, here's a little wink that we're making this up. Anyway, no, it doesn't really matter. It's just, yeah, God bless Luke Jackson, who has not allowed a run that was at least the one that was charged to him since opening day. That's crazy. And he was the guy who was DFA'd multiple times. Like, he was supposed to be.
Yep.
The guy who was supposed to be the least reliable, and, you know, credit to him, he's been really good. So shouts to Luke Jackson. But everybody else has had a bad moment or three in the last 3 weeks or so. You know, Dan Winkler has decent overall numbers, but he's had some bad moments. Minter, we talked about. Sabaka has been kind of a disaster this year after an intriguing start to last season when he came on late.
Who would have thought that a guy that had a high walk rate for his entire minor league career, except for half a season last year, could actually be have walk problems? I mean, it feels like Mauricio Cabrera all over again. Guy, he walked all guys all the time. Then he had one decent stretch in the major leagues. Everyone thought that he had turned a corner, and then, you know, that's kind of been my issue with Sobotka. I mean, I had people tweeting at me all year last year that why wasn't Chad Sobotka on our top prospects list? And it was because of track record. You know, he's a guy that, like, missed time and walked guys all the time. And he had one, and I was as hopeful as anybody. The guy can throw high 90s, and when he's right, he looks great. But then you see him this year, and he leaves his pitches over the plate. And then when he's not doing that, he's walking guys, and it's pretty rough.
It is. I mean, and again, none of this stuff is new. We've had this conversation to varying degrees the last 3 or 4 weeks, so it feels like I don't need to say anything else about the bullpen, but, you know, things came to a crescendo again this week, you know, and, you know, thank God they won today. If they had blown that lead today, I mean, the fan base is already in a bad place. If they blew another one in the ninth with another lead and lost six in a row, like, it would have been untenable on Twitter for the next couple days.
Yeah.
At least they won that one. But I mean, it just wasn't, there wasn't a lot of good things in the last few days. You know, Shane Carl's back now. He replaced Biddle on the roster. They went to Bryce Wilson for a minute, and they didn't really use him. And then they sent him back down when Fulte came up. I don't know. Maybe Blevins will help. And again, I'm not known for my optimism necessarily, but even if they do nothing, I think they'll be better than this. That doesn't really tell you much.
This bullpen doesn't have to be lights out. They just have to be reasonable. And I think they can be. Yes,
I think they can be. I still don't think, you know, everything we've said so far applies. It's unbelievable to me still, as we sit here in late April, that they did nothing in the bullpen. I've said that 100 times. I'll say it again. I said it before the season. This is not revisionist. We all said this before the season started. It blew my mind. With that said, I think if they did nothing different, they'd be better than this. Now, better than this is not good enough, probably, because, as we said before, if you combine an average rotation with a strongly below average bullpen, you're not winning anything. But it's been even worse than we thought it was going to be. Let's just put it that way. Like, no one would have come out and projected this group to be this bad, even with all of the skepticism that we had. It's been worse than advertised.
No, like, Biddle had moments where he was a little rough last year, but he also had times where he looked really good. He seemed like he was going to be a relatively decent reliever. AJ Minter is another guy that we thought like highly of, and that he would be like throwing in high leverage situations, and both of them have been legitimately bad. And that's tough combined with, you know, you lose Vizzy to injury, which, you know, everyone could have probably predicted. Why they guaranteed him a contract when he was, you know, already having to deal with those shoulder issues is another thing that at least struggle for me to understand. And, you know, O'Day hasn't seen the light of day, neither has Gohara. It's just, it's, you know, who's a guy who I think would be a good reliever too.
Yep.
It's kind of, given what was in existence, I'm with you. It didn't have to be for like one of the big name guys. It just, no upgrades is hard for me to understand. That's banking on a lot from a really four that was really shaky in a lot of ways.
They're going to do something. I mean, at some point, you know, Anthopoulos did give a interview to Jeff Schultz of The Athletic that wasn't necessarily particularly revealing. You know, that's not their fault of Schultz. That's just how this thing works. And I like Jeff. Anthopoulos is just very guarded. He doesn't really say much. And, you know, I guess credit to him for sitting down with somebody and talking, but there wasn't too much to glean from it. It was kind of the same thing over and over again. You know, they know them, you know, they reference the market, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's not, both can be true. The market is not really there right now. And also it's his fault and their fault that they didn't do anything before this. Like that was one of the common excuses that people wanted to give us in March when we pointed out that they hadn't done anything in bullpen. Was like, well, they might just be waiting until the season starts, and the payroll is lower, but they'll add in season. I'm like, okay, but if they're below 500 in July, no one's going to care. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of risk there. If your yep. whole plan is to spend in July and August, well, I guess it's just July now with the way they moved the deadline. But if your whole plan is to spend money in June and July on the trade market, that backfires if you're 8 games out. You know, it's rough. And I'm not projecting that. You know, the Braves are still in okay shape, frankly, which is kind of surprising given how bad it's been. But
yeah, they're only like 2.5 games out. You know, like no one in this division, the Phillies have had a little bit of a run lately, but like no one in this division is like trying to run away with it immediately.
No, they've been fortunate. I mean, they're not in a division with like the Rays who went crazy at the start of the season. Like they're even though projection systems kind of have the Braves in the low 80s right now, most of the ones that I've been tracking, and by the way, I have a thread that every couple of days I tweet out on Twitter with all the there's like 5 systems that I use. They're all, you know, low to mid 80s, which is not going to get it done, but it's early enough and the division is tight enough where you're still fine. There's no reason to panic, but you know, if it's still the case in June and you haven't done anything to add to your roster, you know, the gap's probably going to widen, because at some point Philly's going to get hot or Washington's going to get hot, and you're going to be in some trouble if you don't get hot as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, it's just going to come down to the bullpen, because I think that the rotation has a chance to be relatively decent. It would take like Max Fried and Mike Soroka to like, you know, break off like rookie of the year type seasons. I know that Fried's not eligible and all that stuff, but I mean, like, to be that good, you know, going deep into games and stuff like that, to where like the bullpen isn't as much of an issue, because this offense is going to put up runs. You know what I mean? And they've been great. And if, you know, they can get that kind of production where, you know, they have two guys in the rotation that go deep in the games, and you can kind of not have the bullpen be as much of a factor in those games, then, you know, perhaps there's, you know, some more room for growth there. But otherwise, it's going to come down to the bullpen improving, and that's tough. And, you know, in addition to just not making any changes in the offseason, which is almost beating a dead horse at this point, and, you know, some people were like, you know, we get it. They didn't add in the bullpen. And I'm like, yeah, but here we are, and the Braves are losing games because of it. I also think that, you know, one thing that I think that they really do need to do is they need to start looking at those internal candidates, whether they'll be, you know, a Corbin Klaus who's been looking better after dealing with like a minor injury thing, or, you know, giving Jacob Webb some more time on the mound and see if maybe you can get more out of him, you know, as opposed to relying on these same guys who continually disappoint. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to do that, you know, take a chance on one of those guys, or give one of these starting pitching prospects that you have, give them a shot, especially the ones that are already on the 40-man roster.
Yep, there are things that they can do, and hopefully they will address it in some form or fashion. We will see. I guess briefly we'll look ahead before I let you go, man. You know, this week was not a success by any rational measure, even with the highs that arrived, and I still
maintain. Which did exist.
If they listen, and as funny as this is, because they lost several games in a row after this, if the win last Saturday night, if that, even with the lack of success right after it, if they still go on and win 90 games, people will remember that game. That was how crazy that game was. 7-0 to 8-7 is an all timer. But anyway, this week is San Diego at home for 4, and then at Miami for 3. Pretty manageable. San Diego is improved from previous years in some ways, and you're playing at home. But you know, that's not a bad spot. And then at Miami is not very good. So this is a spot that you can make some headway if you play well, and we'll see how they look. But your boy Mike Soroka is on the mound Monday, so that gives you some positivity.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, but I mean that Padres team, they're 16-12 right now. I mean, they're right there.
Yeah, it's not a greatest matchup in the world. It's just that you're at home, and you're still better than them, frankly. I know their record is better. I think the Braves are still better than the Padres, frankly.
Yeah, their run differential is still like -8. So yeah. They've won a lot of close games, and that's fine. But you know, I like the Braves' chances, especially against the San Diego Padres team that I don't have a much respect for their pitching staff. And if you don't have a particularly great pitching staff against this lineup, that could bode some trouble. The one thing about this past week that the Braves have had to go against some really good pitchers, and you know, whether it be the triumphant that the Indians rolled out, or you know, the guys that the Reds were rolling out, those guys, you know, pitch really well. And that kind of makes it a little trickier, combined with the bullpen kind of just imploding. But I like the Braves' chances in the Padres series, and you know, I don't think much of Miami at all. But you know, then there's the whole, you know, you're traveling to, you have Miami, and then you have, you know, the Jose Urania, all that stuff. So that kind of adds a different sort of wrinkle to the whole.
Oh Lord, that's Friday night, which I didn't really put that together. But yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like it's
the Marlins. To your point, they're not facing. Trevor Bauer this week. That's not
no Trevor Bauer, no Kluber.
Chris Paddock's had a really good year for San Diego. It's him and Urena, and there's not too much else going on there. So for the first time in a while, you have some definitive Braves advantages in these starting pitching matchups.
Yep.
And that is helpful, at least on paper. The only time that you really have what I would quantify as a negative matchup is Julio against Chris Paddock on Tuesday, because Paddock's pretty good and Julio is Julio. Yeah. But otherwise,
the Marlins have a -38 run differential through 28 games.
They're bad.
That's tough to be that bad.
Second worst in the league. When you were really, really bad last season, and you like almost set out to be worse by trading Real Muto and selling off even more, like you're going to be awful, and they are. So, but to that end, you have to beat the Marlins consistently if you're the Braves. Like, I don't want to overstate this as much as possible, but you can't play even with the Marlins. You need to bludgeon the Marlins, because
everyone else in the division is going
to
be tough.
I was going to say, because they're going to lose everybody, and you have to beat them. That's just it might sound simplistic, but if you go out and, you know, go 10-9 against the Marlins this year, that would not be great. You need to go out and beat them 14-5 or something outrageous like that. They're that bad, and you need those wins. So,
agreed.
We'll see. All right, man. Well, we've covered a lot of ground on the pod today, I think. We could have gone game by game, but that would have taken a long time, because there was a lot of stuff that happened this week. But please plug anything that you would like. I know you were sort of out of pocket this week, and so was I, so not too much going on, but I know we're both on tap to do things this week, so please plug anything that you'd like to.
Yep. First of all, apologies in advance that Road to Atlanta didn't happen this week. I had some pretty serious family emergency that kind of came up in the middle of the week, which resulted in me just having to be around. For those who have been asking, everything is fine now. Everyone seems to be well on the path of recovery, so I appreciate that. But Road to Atlanta will be back this week. I'm not going to spoil the guest because not everything is set in stone yet, but I've talked
it's
to a couple
of people.
Yeah, Brad's gonna be on the pod to talk about prospects.
Have no fear, it's not me. I am the. I think I'll probably be the last person you ever ask. Like, I think if everyone, it'd be like, I'm trying to think of how long you'd have to go without finding a guest before you get to me for Road to Atlanta. It would be a long, long wait, I think. Which is fine. It's way you shouldn't have me on. That's not my thing. So
yeah, I mean, prospects in the minor leagues isn't you know what exactly you know gets you going, and I respect it.
I enjoy it, but I am not as informed as you guys are, and I wouldn't want to bring the overall level down. So here we are.
But a couple high level guests are very possible this week. I just got to firm things up tomorrow to see if that's going to happen. So make sure you're around for that. That will air Thursday as normal. Again, apologies in advance that the show didn't happen last week. Other than that, I'm just going to, you know, there's going to be a draft primer article that I'm putting up tomorrow to kind of give everyone ideas to kind of what's going on with the draft. It's creeping up on us. You know, it's going to be a little over a month away now, and the Braves have two first round picks, and it's going to be a big deal as to kind of how that goes, considering where we expect the Braves to be drafting going forward, and combined with the international free agents sanctions, you would kind of need to make sure that these two picks are good ones. So we're doing a lot of work on the in the background on the draft, and we're going to kind of start some of that tomorrow, where we kind of give an idea as to kind of, you know, what the bonus pool looks like and all that jazz. Beyond that, just, you know, minor league recaps are up and rolling, and, you know, there's a lot of good things happening in the minors. Even though someone decided to comment on the minor league recap today that there's no such thing as a starting pitching prospect, and the Braves have a terrible farm system, which made me laugh out loud a lot. But, you know, we're doing a lot of coverage. Minor leagues are really fun right now. There's both position prospects and pitching prospects that are doing some really cool things, including some names we weren't expecting. So, you know, just make sure you're reading all that stuff, and make sure you know, I occasionally tweets nice things to Brad for me as well. I like trolling Brad, but honestly, you know, he puts in a ton of work for us getting the podcast every week and, you know, making sure things are going well on that end. And, you know, you guys should be nicer to him.
No, absolutely not. That would not be fun anyway. So, listen, I welcome all the challengers. No, we have fun, and, please subscribe to this podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast, because you get this one and Road to Atlanta in the same exact place. So go ahead and do that. Leave 5-star feedback. I really, really appreciate all of that. Thank you, Eric, for joining me as often, and we'll do it again very soon.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.